This is Limitless Possibility. I'm Luc-Olivier Dumablet.
And I'm Yannick Magnan.
And what's our topic this week, Yannick?
We're revisiting the Apple Watch 6 months after launch.
Wow. It has been 6 months since the Apple Watch launched.
I know. It feels like yesterday.
It does. Oh my goodness. Time flies.
Yep.
So before we jump into your subject, I have a little bit of follow-up. So let's get into it. On Tuesday, the November 17th of this year, Apple Pay has been finally live in Canada. So I put a couple of links related to it. Obviously, the Apple website now in Canada has a beautiful page related to Apple Pay. Obviously, yet again, it's only supports Amex. And also the Apple Pay page on the Apple's Canadian website mentioned the official partners. I don't know how to call them, but they have a list of official partners. Obviously, Apple Pay supported were all with any NFC terminal. But I think what official partner means is those partners will be able to use the Apple Pay logo and all of that stuff compared to normal retailers and restaurants that will just use the NFC logo. A little bit of a nice feature that is only available on the Canadian version of Apple Pay is that in Canada, there won't be any limit regarding of the amount you try to charge. So in the US, and I think also it's in the UK, but the limit is maybe 60 or 70 pounds. But I know that in the US, the limit is $100. So in Canada, and I think Amex Canada is saying that because the NFC market is not a new market in Canada, and I think they put more security in place. They are vague, but they just said that, yeah, Canada is good, so let's remove that feature, that limit, pardon me. Also, Apple commented on why they decided to go with Amex only, and Jennifer Bailey, which we saw at the WWDC keynote, if I recall correctly, says that the company is starting with Amex in Canada and Australia because it is both the card issuer and the payment network operator. So, quote-unquote, coordination is easy. The problem with the Visa and MasterCard, according to Apple, is they are only the payment network operator. So banks are the card issuer, and obviously you need to go to each bank to verify the customer identity, and that's a pain in the butt for Apple.
Sure is. As someone who has a debit card that currently is not working, I would love to use Apple Pay, but unfortunately, I'm not going to switch to Amex.
Oh, is it the same problem you had last time we met in person?
Yeah, and then I just never called the bank because I'm lazy.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so obviously on Tuesday, there was a lot of blabber on the internet related to Apple Pay. There's a lot of Canadians that are pissed that it's only Amex, supported in Amex. And related to only being supported by Amex, iPhone Canada listed all of the store, restaurant chains, and other places that accept credit card where Amex is accepted. So it seems that Amex is accepted at more places that I knew about. I won't change for Amex, but it's good to know. And hopefully in the coming day/week, and I will hopefully suggest that to our listener, I will call my bank and complain about not having Apple Pay, because I think at this point, this is the only way to make a statement, is by either complaining or by moving to Amex. Because as we know, right now, the according to rumors, the negotiation between Apple and Canadian banks are now down the tube, because Canadian banks don't want to give money to Apple because Apple wants money. More on Apple Pay again, because we all love Apple Pay. So for the US market, we obviously got tons of new banks and credit union. That's a little bit crazy that in other countries they don't want to work with banks, but in the US they do. But it's frustrating that Apple is more okay to work hard with US than other countries, but I won't go on that topic.
Put yourself in the shoes of the banks and the credit unions that are left in the US that don't support Apple Pay. They're the little players. They can't afford to not be on Apple Pay because they're going to lose customers by the droves if they don't join in. So I think it's more Apple got the big players early, and now the little players are seeing if they don't take part in it, they're screwed. So they don't have much of a choice to get into whether they like it or not.
You're totally right on that. And I think that's what we're currently seeing again. And hopefully that's why I mentioned that at this moment, either in Canada or in Australia, which I will come a little bit later, your only solution to maybe show your current bank that you want Apple Pay is to complain to them a lot or cancel your current credit card and move to Amex.
Well, I'm going to have a great opportunity when I call for my bank to try and fix my card to also complain about Apple Pay at the same time. So maybe being lazy was just an excuse so I could multitask.
Good. More regarding the US market, there's also new official partners coming in the next few months. So we have Cinnamon that is going to be launched in their retail and restaurant store in the during the next year. Also, the Domino's company-owned pizza store will support Apple Pay before the end of the year. Starbucks is planning to do a pilot before the end of the year with broader rollout next year. And KFC, our big love for KFC. Not kidding. It will be in spring 2016.
I'm kind of surprised that Starbucks wasn't in the initial run of partners, because usually Starbucks is pretty friendly to Apple with those kinds of things. I mean, they even had the Starbucks and iTunes collaboration for a while, where remember if you went to a Starbucks with the iTunes app open on your iPhone, there was a Starbucks tab that would tell you the song that's playing in the Starbucks and you could buy it right there.
Right, and is it me or they do support Apple Pay, but they're in their application? I think they do.
So you could use Apple Pay to charge up your Starbucks card, maybe?
Yeah, I think they were launching partners for that feature.
But I would imagine that a lot of Starbucks locations just have NFC terminals, except they just weren't officially using the Apple logo and whatever. So I don't know.
Yeah, that's my thinking. But or maybe they are starting to do those put those NFC terminals in store.
The other thing is, I think we heard that loyalty card programs are coming to Apple Pay at some point, and maybe Starbucks involvement is sort of tied with that, because I know Starbucks cards have their own reward systems, so that might also have something to do with it. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. I think it was part of the iOS 9 release that the new wallet app would support loyalty cards.
Yeah, but then we never heard about it ever again, so it's sort of...
Yeah. Quick update on the UK market now. So there were two new banks that got added the same day that Apple Pay launched in Canada. They added TSB and Tesco Bank, and there were also in the news the mention of Barclays, and Barclays loved to remind people that it will be supporting Apple Pay, quote unquote, very early in the new year. I think it's one of the last big banks in UK that does not support it, and were maybe supposed to be part of the launching partners, and then they kind of retract. And I don't remember, but there was one bank in UK, so I didn't.
Yeah, I think they had their own competing mobile payment solution, and then they just sort of decided, oh, well, we'll go with our solution, and then they U-turned and decided, yeah, maybe we're going to go with Apple Pay after all, or something to that effect.
And finally, in the maybe boring for a listener follow-up regarding Apple Pay, but I was really excited about it this week. Apple Pay is launching in Australia tomorrow for us. It will be launching on Thursday, November 19.
Well, due to the time zones, it's currently launching in Australia as we speak, because it's in the same time zone as Japan, and right now it's Thursday 11 a.m. in Australia.
Good, so Australians a small portion of Australian are enjoying Apple Pay the same way that a small portion of Canadian are enjoying Apple Pay.
Yep.
Good. Now let's talk about that funny thing I have on my wrist. Oh, it's an Apple Watch.
Yay. Actually, I have one last item of follow-up, and that is I know we've been talking a lot about YouTube Red on past episodes, and it's not exactly tied to the contents of the episode that we were referring to, so we're going to stop talking about it. It's a dead topic to us unless it eventually involves gaming somehow. But I would recommend that anybody who is interested in hearing more about YouTube Red and the implications of the program on creators, go listen to Hello Internet episode 50. About halfway through the episode, they start talking about what it means. And it was a very enlightening episode, and you should go listen to it if you care about such things. If you don't, we are going to spare you the details on YouTube Red for the foreseeable future, at least until gaming becomes involved in the equation, because I know we've been spending a lot of time on it, and it's only barely related to the topic of that episode, so we're going to stop it there. Now we can go on and talk about the Apple Watch. So the Apple Watch, it's been a little over 6 months since the Apple Watch launched. And I've been meaning for a while to go back and listen to the episode that we recorded back when it originally launched to hear what we said about it, to see if we were wrong about certain things, to see if our opinions have changed at all since that time. And of course, since it's the holiday season, some people may be considering to buy an Apple Watch for a special someone. And maybe we should comment on whether or not that's a good idea. So I would like to start by saying that at the end of the original episode on the Apple Watch, which unfortunately I do not have the episode number in front of me because I am stupid and forgot to write it in my notes.
Oh, let me check. I have the notes, the website in front of me, and if I recall correctly, it should be... my goodness. That's nice.
Let's see who can scroll fastest.
I think... Hey, that's entertaining.
It's episode 13, Out with the Girls.
Oh, yeah, now I see it. Oh, yeah, we mentioned about...
our monster 2.5-hour episode.
Yeah, where we talked about NS Nord and the Apple Watch impression. Now I see it, yeah.
Out with the Girls. So at the end of that episode, we said basically wait for the native SDK or wait for second-gen hardware, except we weren't sure when second-gen hardware was going to be because it's unproven what the upgrade cycle for these is going to be. And most of the issues that we identified with the Apple Watch were issues that could be fixed in software and not an issue with the hardware itself. So everything really could be remedied within certain restraints. Of course, you can't like do crazy shit because there's only so much RAM in the Apple Watch, but you can do a lot of things. And sadly, a lot less of the things that I thought were going to get fixed with WatchOS 2 got fixed. For example, where's the Reminders app? Everybody in their Apple Watch reviews said, it's really weird that you can use Siri to make reminders and then you can't actually ever view or delete those reminders afterwards. Where is text input language switching? I was saying on the original episode, they are pitching this as a very useful device for travel. And when you travel, you may actually have to speak more than one language, but your experience with dictation on the Apple Watch is tied to one language. You can't actually switch them on the fly, and we still can't force touch on the text input screen to actually choose the language. That's kind of frustrating. So before I go into the major points I have to say about how I feel about the Apple Watch now, I think we should just have a quick status update. And first of all,
we start on the quick status update, I do remind that my conclusion of the original episode was I wanted the Apple Watch to fix 2 points that I have with, not three, but third one was already fixed at that point. So I had three issues with the, Pebble that I used, quite a lot thanks to you, Yannick. And the first one was design, which was already fixed at the time of the episode. The second one was, all of the pairing process and connections issue and all of that stuff. Let's say that the connection part is kind of fixed, though I did run out into issues, but I think it happened only one for a pairing, for a connection issues. So one issue in 6 months is just, in my opinion, for Bluetooth devices, it's just normal. So let's put that fixed. And the third one is apps, which we'll go on later, but yeah, we have tons of stuff to say about apps.
Yes, definitely.
So, quick status update now.
Yeah. First question I want to ask you is, have you gotten any new bands for your Apple Watch?
Seriously, it's funny that you asked that question, because right now, besides looking at your notes, I have a tab open on the Apple website for the bands, and this website has been open since Monday, because this idea is kind of in my mind right now because Christmas is coming. I was like, it's not the like the current band that I have. And just to remind the listener, Yannick and I have the same band, if I recall correctly.
The yeah, Black Sports Band.
Sport Black.
Yeah.
And it's not that it didn't age well, but it's like you can see that it has been worn for 6 months all day long. So I was looking at buying new bands, and I still don't know what I want to get. Like, I maybe want to get a fancier one to wear like most of the days, and then if I plan to spend some time outside, whether it may be dirt, water, and stuff like that, that I might be switching to a sport band. But the problem is those are expensive. So I started to look at maybe possible third-party solution. And the problem is it feels to me that you have the Apple band that looks beautiful. And obviously, like we went on that episode, I went to the Apple store and tried them. And you have those third parties that looks really cheap.
Yeah. Like
the one that are... That looks to me as high quality as the Apple one are about the same price. And yeah, most of the time they are not as, in my opinion, that's obviously a lot of subjectivity in that statement, but it feels to me that they are about the same price and the Apple one looks better.
Well, part of that is I know that a lot of the third-party band companies, I suspect part of their problem is their product photography isn't very good. A lot of the things look almost like 3D renders of bands sometimes. It doesn't actually really look like a real product.
No, you're right, it does. It's like kind of weird.
Yeah, it's really strange. And I think that if we would see third-party bands in person, we would have maybe a little different opinion about it. The problem is we never do because they're third-party bands and Apple's not going to have them in their stores. And there's just not a place where you can buy those, really, as far as I know, in retail. And get to check them out, which is part of the whole Apple Watch buying experience, is really trying out those bands. Well, if you're not like me and buy it online, but yeah, it's just part of the experience of buying an Apple Watch, and you can't really replicate that with third-party bands, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, and just yeah, okay. So I just reopened the website from the Nomad Case and Dock Company, so they're making. It's more like they do portable cables and portable batteries, and they have a pre-order right now for their new, they call it strap for Apple Watch. It is a rugged leather strap that wears in with the years. That's their kind of a marketing statement, and it looks beautiful. And their price right now is, it's a little bit cheaper than the leather one from Apple. A delivery one from Apple in Canadian dollars is $200, and this one right now as a pre-order is $119, but I'm guessing it's US dollar again. So it's a little bit cheaper, and it looks as good as the Apple one, but that's the only one I found.
Yeah, and the band prices also went up recently because of the exchange rate with the US dollars, so that doesn't help either.
Yeah.
But let's not get into that topic.
Let's continue because I will cry again.
So I was going to ask you if you're still satisfied with your original choice of band. I am, for what it's worth. I do not have any wearing issues. Like, it doesn't look like... I couldn't tell it. It's in any... I can't tell it's any different than on launch day. So I don't know what you're talking about, really.
You know what? Like, I just removed the watch and kind of looking at it, and it is subtle a little bit. Like, I do take time to clean it properly, maybe like a couple of in a period of a couple of days, and you can see where the band tucks under the shorter part that it is worn out. And it, like, I think that's the magic of that band, is if you look at it from far away, you don't see it, but when you clean it and then you see that there's scruffs in it, and that there's like kind of friction traces, if you can understand what I mean.
Yeah.
So, but you're right that those, you need to look for, not look for them, but they kind of show. So, but it is kind of expected for a quote unquote plastic band.
Well, I would say anything that you wear is gradually going to slowly deteriorate like that. because that's part of the game when you're a wearable thing.
Yeah, indeed. And that's what I think is charming about the Nomad one that I just mentioned, is it seems that their marketing point is not you buy it new, is you buy it new, you wear it, and it will become even better after a couple of weeks or months of wearing it.
Yeah, which you definitely can't say that for any of the existing bands in the lineup from Apple. And one of the other things I noted from when I was re-listening to our episode is you said that the leather loop reminded you of the smart covers, the leather smart covers. And I have a polyurethane smart cover that I got for my iPad Air 2 years ago when I originally bought it. And 2 years later, I can tell you that that thing is basically falling apart and filthy and disgusting. But it just reminded me of that when I was listening to that episode. I was like, wow, I would not want that watch band if it's like the leather smart cover, because like I'm really worried about how it would stand up to the test of time.
Yeah, I will be surprised if it handles time properly.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear from the owners of that band how it's going to turn out after time. I think most people have actually converged to the sports band, if I
think. Yeah, and I think I most people that haven't converted will go did go to metal bands.
Yeah, like the Milanese and the Link bracelet.
Yeah, so you would say that you're still satisfied from your original choice?
Definitely.
Good.
Next up, are we still using the same watch faces?
I'm not. What about you?
Well, I remember that on the original episode that we recorded, I said I was using utility, and I switched to simple. But they're basically the same face. The only difference is that instead of having one wide complication at the bottom of the screen, you get two in the corners. But otherwise, they are effectively the same face. But that is the only change I have done. I know last time I saw you, I think you were running with modular, right?
I am. I started like you on utility, and I really enjoyed I think it's the motion. I think it's called the motion. The jellyfish one.
Yeah.
But I remember that in the past episode that I mentioned that the main problem with the motion watch face is no complication.
Yeah, it's really unacceptable that they don't have those, at least in the bottom corners.
Yeah, let's be correct here, and they have only one complication, which is the date.
Yeah,
so,
which is not really even... Yeah, it's not a real one, really.
And so sometimes during weekend, I will end up switching to it, but it's been a while since I last did it. These days, I'm using, like you said, a modular, and I've been pretty happy about modular, especially since watchOS 2, where I'm using the multicolor one, so
yeah.
Every complication will define their own color.
That's a really nice improvement, I find.
Yeah, especially for the modular one.
Yeah.
I'm still skeptical about varying colors for, I think it's utility that
does
that.
Yeah, it's utility.
I'm not sure if, it's been a while though since I've used utility, but I don't know if it's good or not, in the day-to-day usage.
The first thing I noticed, because when I installed the WatchOS 2 betas, I was trying every face out just to see if they change anything. And the first thing I noticed was that the rings were colored now. And I think if they had only made the rings color but left everything else gray like it used to be before, it would have been fine. But now people are bitching because there's a little calendar icon next to the calendar complication, and that thing is orange. And if you have a different color, the second hand, you can customize the color, I think. If you have a different color for that, then it looks wrong. So I don't know. Lots of people were angry. I think it looks fine, but I understand why people are angry. But yeah, I'm not using utility, so I don't really care. My bigger concern with watch faces is the only good digital watch face, if you want to use complications... Actually, let me change that. The only digital watch face with complications is modular. So if you don't like it, you're basically screwed. And you can't customize really the layout of how you want the complications to be laid out in modular. So you're limited to basically having four small complications and one big one. You can't shuffle those around on the screen to do it exactly how you want. which would be a welcome change in my book. If they would just add another screen to the customization process for that watch face, maybe it would be tolerable, but I just don't like it.
Yeah, I heard from people that would like to move the position of the time from the Mundolor watch face. I heard that people would want it bigger, smaller, in the middle, and all of that stuff. But I'm sure Apple could have a solution to make that even more modular and have a good UX for that. But it seems like doing a like full-on modular a watch face where you can move element and it's kind of based on a grid would be hard to do on the watch, like to move the element from place to place with my finger or with the digital crown.
Certain watch faces, you can modify things on the watch app on the phone. So I don't see why, if you had like a super custom modular face, why you couldn't just do the modular customization in the watch app on the phone instead of doing it right on the watch. Like, it's not something I would think of changing on the fly, really.
Yeah, no, okay, get your point.
One thing I would like to note about this entire conversation we've had about watch faces, nobody has mentioned the photo face, nobody has mentioned the time-lapse face, nobody has mentioned the photo album face, which were all added in watchOS 2. Time-lapse face is interesting, except I get frustrated every time I raise my wrist and it's daytime, because it's daytime outside. I would want it to be all nighttime all the time, because I don't believe in daytime. But unfortunately, that is not an option, so I would have to give that a 1-star review on the App Store if it had reviews. And the photo album and photo faces are just boring and static. You can get animated ones with live photos, and I'm surprised there isn't someone who made like a Mac app to make custom watch faces with live photos, because that would be really cool. So here's a free app idea if you want to do an app for the Mac. And yeah, that's about all I have to say for watch faces.
My main problem with those new watch faces is they have the same problem as the motion one.
Yep, no complications.
No complication.
And those make sort of more sense, because you have no idea what's going to be under you in those cases, necessarily color-wise. So you can't necessarily guarantee that they're going to be visible under it. But then again, neither is the time. So I guess they use some smart algorithm or whatnot to try and determine like what color the date and time should be on top of that face. But otherwise, actually, I don't even think you can have the date on the photo one. I think it's only in the motion and time-lapse ones that you can have the date on top, which is strange. But yeah, so those watch faces that we launched, I'm sure somebody is using them. Like, people with kids probably have like the face of their kids there, because that's what parents do. But yeah, aesthetically, they are not very pleasing, and they're not very utilitarian either, which is why we're not using them. So I guess the last question in our main status update thing is, has our watch usage really changed meaningfully since the last time we talked about the Apple Watch?
I don't think it did. And it's funny that you use that question as a segue to the next section, because I think if any part of a usage would have changed, it would have been related to new apps, new interesting apps, and not to the default feature, like the Apple provided features of the watch, because those haven't changed that much since the launch.
Yeah, there have been it's during the watchOS 2 beta, it was incredibly hard to tell if anything had changed at all on my watch. Because everything was so similar to how it was during launch. They were really just going all in on trying to get the SDK ready and everything, and they didn't really concentrate that hard on getting new features into watchOS 2 core applications. Which, yeah, it leads me to the next section, which is we were all banking on watchOS 2 to be really the maturing point of the Apple Watch, where suddenly this would become usable by normal people. And the big issue with that is that developer adoption of the native SDK has been piss poor. It's sort of surprising because there were so many watch apps out on day one, and we were all surprised at that. And it seems that a lot of people have either not decided to update their apps yet, or they're realizing that the watch just isn't great for active app use, and maybe the app that they designed for watchOS 1 should just go away and we can live without it. Number one example of that is Marco Arment, who makes Overcast. He has commented a couple times about how basically he never uses the Overcast watch app, so there's no real reason for it to exist. And I'm
You don't know how much it pisses me off when I heard that. I was so pissed off. I was like, even if he didn't use it, it was like, it was brilliant enough to just put the default feature in it. Like, what's your next podcast? That is a big feature in my book. Also, the time remaining, which, if I recall correctly, the default glance doesn't do yet.
Yeah, the only thing I ever do in the Overcast app, and I'm 100% honest here, is I go in and I recommend a podcast while I'm listening to it. Otherwise, I never go in the Overcast app, ever.
Hmm. And that's only for the watch, right?
Yeah, on the phone, I use it all the time.
Okay, yeah, sure. So, yeah, and maybe that's the problem. Like, because I'm thinking of what all of the stuff that I'm currently doing and looking at the apps that I have, and yeah, don't use them that much.
Yeah, well,
the one I really still wish it would work perfectly was Transit, but it's kind of a hit and miss situation right now.
Yeah, well, what I'm realizing is that most of the apps that I use on the Apple Watch are helpers for acting on notifications, but I will never go to them directly. So that means you get a notification from an app and you want to act on that notification, but you don't want to get your phone app. So what do? Well, you launch the watch app and you deal with it directly on your watch. Normally, the way that manifests itself is, let's say you have a third-party messaging app like Line, and you install their app, and then you get a message that comes in, and we're going to talk a little bit about this later in some of my gripes, but you get a message, you want to click the reply button, and the reply button, unfortunately, Line doesn't support quick reply, so it opens in the Line Watch app, and then you can use dictation or stickers to reply directly from within the app. That is acceptable. Facebook Messenger does a similar thing. Whenever you get a notification that comes in and you want to act on it, there is use in having a watch app, but you're never or hardly ever going to go to the watch app to actually actively do something. The one example I can think of where I do go actively to the watch app is Swarm, because I want to check in, and that is an active thing I do. But otherwise, I rarely ever launch an app just to do something in it. It's always reactive.
No, I think you mentioned the best example of acting behavior with the Apple Watch, and it is the Swarm app. And this app is my go-to example for improvements of watchOS 2 and the native SDK.
Yeah.
Because you saw a big difference between those two versions before the difference between the watchOS 1 version and the native SDK version, which watchOS 2. We discussed a lot about that offline, and we think it's part of related because the UI shows up faster now, but yeah, the data is not there yet.
Yeah, it's showing the cache data from the past launch, and then you have to wait a while for the location to get updated, which can take quite a while depending where you are.
Yeah. Like, the best use I have right now is when I just stop at the gas station to check in, and that's pretty fast. I just press check in while I'm putting gas, and I do have time to do that and just wait, and then that's done.
Yep. Another thing people were really excited for in watchOS 2 was third-party complications. The problem is, of course, since developers have not really been updating their apps, nobody has really made complications that are any good, as far as I can tell. And the other thing is, it's incredibly hard to find apps that actually have complications because, as we've mentioned on the Apple TV episode last week, they've updated the store once. And actually, breaking news, since the last episode, they updated the App Store for the second time.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah. Now Tweetbot is featured on the front page.
It is. Ooh.
Yeah. It's incredibly hard to actually find any apps that have complications. And then once you do find the apps that have complications, it's incredibly hard to find any that are worth caring about, which is sort of a problem.
Do you have any app with complication that you care?
Yes, and I'm going to talk about it a little later. There's also Workflow, which is actually fairly useful because you can just put scripts right on your watch face and you can scroll through them using time travel, which is a nice hack that I wouldn't have thought of. So now I want to talk about the developer side of things because I spent the summer trying to write a watch app.
Oh my. Can I go on a small tangent for a bit?
Yes.
Remember the issue you mentioned where WatchKit would return nil value?
Yes, I'm talking Swift. About that right next.
Yeah, but I know you'll bring it up, but that's my main argument when I have a discussion about Swift. And it's like, you know, Swift and nullables, it's nice, but it's not perfect. And then I always give that situation as an example.
I'm glad that I'm helping you in arguments at work. So let me tell that story. I'm going to tell two stories about trying to develop a watch app. This summer, I was working on an app called Concierge, which was going to display Foursquare lists and let you A, check in, B, get directions, and C, mark it as done. So you could basically have this to-do list for planning your day, and you could do everything from your wrist. And it was going to be really cool until I started programming it, and then I ran into bunch of weird problems, and one of them had to do with the watch connectivity framework, which is new in watchOS 2, and it is the main way you communicate between your iPhone and your Apple Watch if you are an application. And what I was doing is I was trying to sync information back and forth between my iPhone and my watch, which of course is naturally what you want to do. You can also talk directly to the server, except then you have to sort of juggle what's my synced server state, what's my synced local state, what's all that. And for the sake of just simplifying everything, I just wanted to do local sync between iPhone and the watch. And I would work on doing the remote sync later and all that stuff. But now the app is canceled, so that's never going to happen. Watch connectivity. I was writing the watch app in Swift. And Swift has these things called optionals, which let you say, hey, I have a variable, but this variable will always contain a value. The problem is there is a function which is supposed to return the state of your application as it was last transferred from the phone. And it is non-nullable. And guess what you get when you first run it or update the app from the App Store?
It returns nil.
Yeah. But one of the cool features of Swift, of course, is if you have a non-optional value, it can't contain nil, so it won't let you pretend that it contains nil because it will never contain nil, right? Except it does. So you can't actually handle the crash from that function call. And basically the first time you launch the app, if you haven't on the watch, and if you haven't launched the app on the phone first, your app retrieving that value is going to crash. And there's nothing you can do about it. Now the solution is write your app in Objective-C, which of course, if you are trying to put Swift up on a pedestal as the future of iOS programming, not a very compelling case when your WatchKit framework basically says, haha, we're going to ignore one of the conventions of the language. So that was a very frustrating experience. And as far as I know, it has not been fixed yet.
And I'm about to ask you a question, and I said that at that
yes,
time.
Yes, I know what you're going to say. Did you follow radar? And I say no.
Then?
Yes, I should shut up.
Next hey, up. Wow, maybe you should do a podcast where I just say a couple of words and you complete sentences, and then after 5 minutes, we'll be done.
It's a new show where I tell you all of the radars I haven't filed.
oh my goodness.
The next radar I haven't filed is not actually a bug. It's
a feature.
It's the documentation that is broken. So one of the great things about watchOS, right, is that it reuses a lot from iOS and from the Mac. And one of the things that got reused is MapKit. And of course, MapKit is great because on other platforms, you can open the map app directly to a location if you want via either a URL or an API call. There is documentation on how to do both of those on watchOS. The problem is both of those things are unsupported on watchOS. So there is a document that details all of the URL schemes that are understood by the system. And this document, unfortunately, is universal to iOS, macOS, and watchOS. And it erroneously lists watchOS 2 as supporting maps calls. Unfortunately, first of all, there is no open URL call on the watchOS. Or actually, there is one. It's called Open System URL, but it only handles telephone and SMS URLs. Everything else is ignored, so that doesn't work. But even though the documentation says it does, and then you go to the MapKit documentation. Of course, the MapKit documentation was borrowed from iOS and macOS, and there's this nice API you can call, which opens the map app directly to the destination you want to go to and does all the direction stuff and all that stuff, and it works great on iOS and on Mac, and it is listed as supported on watchOS 2, and guess what it doesn't work on watchOS 2. And of course, it doesn't list it there, but if you go to the watchOS 2 release notes, which are in a completely different part of the site and you would not think to go to because it's after the release of the OS, so clearly the bugs that were listed in the release notes for the beta versions of the OS should be fixed by now. Well, of course, no, they're not. You have to basically do an invisible handshake. I don't know, because the Workflow app actually does this. It does open the Maps app completely like I wanted to do, and I have no fucking way how they did it, because every way that is listed in the documentation does not work on watchOS 2.
Are you happy now?
No.
Oh my goodness.
So basically, don't write a watch app, and don't write it in Swift if you really want to write a watch app. That is my tip. So it's incredibly frustrating as a developer to basically have this half-baked platform, and a lot of the stuff basically seems to be either lack of communication between the people doing Swift and the people, well, it's not really the people doing Swift, it's just bad usage of Swift stuff in a framework that was designed without Swift in mind, I would imagine.
Yeah, I think it's more a limitation of what you can do in Objective-C code related to interoperability with Swift.
But the thing is, you could have just left it as an optional and it would work.
Yeah,
fine.
I know. I'm sure it's an oversight, because I did have a discussion with a colleague this week where I bring that issue again. It was like, you know, I specified a parameter as non-annulable, but it's Objective-C, so I can pass a nil, but the compiler is complaining. And I was like, yep, I know about that. Do you want to know how to do to pass nil to that function call? He's like, yeah, sure, why? I want to know. That's my problem. So I was like, hey, just create a variable, call it whatever, put nil in it, and put the variable into the parameter, and that's it. And that's great. Maybe like, okay, I'll go on a small tangent again related to code, and hopefully it will be the last time for this episode. But it feels to me that there's kind of a lacking here in the dev tools, where it feels to me that bringing those information related to those value of being nillable or non-nillable, that static analyzing tool or the compiler should be able to do analysis of your code and should be able to detect that, oh, you're passing a value and the value doesn't change from being uninitialized to uninitialized before you call. You use it in that method, which requires it to be non-nil, so there's a risk of it being nil. The same way kind of detects memory leak and retain cycle, so.
Yeah, my bet is that by next WWDC, all of this issue is gone, basically.
Yeah, the problem is during, like, a few days ago, I saw a tweet related to that where the guy kind of filed the radar regarding something close to that and got laughed at from the person replying to that radar saying, oh, you're funny, you want that? You know that's impossible to do. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
So hopefully that's just bad communication and we'll get it, but oh well.
We'll see. So before I move on to the next topic, I would like to ask you if there are any watchOS 2 apps that you actually enjoy. You're trying to think to come up with which apps are watchOS 2 enabled because there are so few of them.
Yeah, I think I like the Sworn app. I wouldn't say that I enjoy it, but that's the only one I have in mind. The other one that I use a lot is the Philips Hue app, which is, I don't know if it's ported to the new native SDK, but it is a little bit faster these days, but it has the same feature as previously. So, yep, it's kind of hard to come up with apps. Don't use that much workflow, though I think I have it installed on my watch. And maybe I should explore it.
It's still pretty limited in what you can do, really, because you can't really do cross-app communication on the watch, which is one of my frustrations, really. But that's like superpower user level that probably is never going to come to the watch.
No, sure. And like most of the workflow I have right now is for this podcast and needs internet communication between apps. So, but I would see maybe like I just want to send a specific maybe a tweet or a iMessage to somebody, and it's kind of repetitive. I can just press a button. Seriously, yeah. I don't have any. That's my main problem is I don't have any. And I'll repeat myself again, and that's kind of pisses me off a bit, is the app's problem is the same problem with the Pebble. And the Pebble had a big app problem with iOS. I think it's, from what I heard, it's kind of resolved with Android now with the newer version of the OS for Pebble watches. It's still maybe better but not perfect, but at least it is better than the iOS support for the Pebble, and I maybe would say that it's better than WatchKit. I don't know, but I'm honestly disappointed, but I was kind of expecting it a bit.
All right, before I move on, the two apps that I would recommend on WatchOS 2 are such a joke, but I guess that tells you the state of the platform right now. So one of the apps I really enjoy is Clicker by the Icon Factory, and that is basically an app that lets you count up and display that counter in a complication. And I am using it right now because there is a big Destiny event where I have to play 6 games a day to unlock a bunch of gear. And I am using it to keep track of how many games I play during the day so I don't lose count. And that is literally all I use it for. I also really like the Swarm app, as Zucaribia says, except I would love it if it would just get my location faster. And I understand that there is stuff going on and that you can't just magically make the network fast. But it could be better. And maybe it would just be better to just not show any data instead of showing me stale data. That might actually be the tweak that I'm looking for.
You know what? Previously, it was not showing data. It was just either showing nothing or a spinner, and we were complaining about it. So I don't know what is the best solution here.
But I would just prefer it if it would just show me, like, loading or something instead of, and still be interactive. Like, it's doing work in the background, but still be interactive, but just say loading instead of showing me old data. I don't know. So the next big issue with the Apple Watch is erosion of user confidence. Every little bit of friction in these apps and the operating system and all of that, you feel it a lot more than on other devices because it's a device that's made for quick interactions. And if you feel friction too often, your confidence will be completely eroded and you are less likely to continue doing that thing on your watch. I'm going to give some real-life examples of stuff that really grinds my gears with WatchOS 2. Starting off with, did you know that if you are dictating a reply, let's say, in an app, and a notification comes in, it cancels the dictation, so you have to start all over again? Now, this is a problem because I have notifications enabled on a group chat. Now, you might say, you're an idiot. Why would you enable notifications in a group chat? That means you have 6 people talking to you at the same time, right? Well, it's a group chat that is generally low traffic. But when people post in it, people are more likely to reply. And I might be one of the people who might want to reply. So I start dictating a reply, and I get interrupted, and I start dictating a reply, and I get interrupted. And then the third time, I just give up. And now I basically have given up entirely on replying to chats on my watch because it's going to get interrupted 90% of the time.
Do you know if it's a limitation of the messaging app you're using, or is it the OS limitation?
I think it's an OS limitation, because on iOS, the way it works is when you get a notification and you're inside that app, it just calls it internally in the app and it doesn't show the notification at the system level. In iOS, when I'm inside the app dictating, it still shows the notification as a full system takeover. So the app isn't getting a local callback saying, I got this notification. So it can't just deal with it locally or ignore it or show it. But really, realistically, the thing that should happen is the OS should take notifications while they come in during my dictation and hold them until I'm done dictating and then show them to me.
Yeah, the second, because I think when it transform the audio to text, it's still the OS control. So the second you dismiss that OS control because you're accepting the text that Siri gave you, what you're saying is it should then show you the notification that it has in its queue. Yeah. That could be a good fix.
So that is really irritating. Another thing is one of the features, I guess, of the Apple Watch is that now developers are given control of what the notifications look like. And that is a good and a bad thing. The good thing is if you have a really tailored application, and let's say you get a notification for stock price or something, and you want to show a graph in line, you can do that now because you have full visual control of what your notification looks like on the watch. And it's the only platform where you have that kind of control, which is really neat. The issue is that lets incompetent developers or people with bad taste make really terrible notifications. And I'm going to call out the Line app for this.
Seriously, please email Yannick for that statement.
You're going to see very quickly what I'm talking about. Line's notifications are terrible because usually if I'm getting a message from a group chat, the way it will be displayed is the name of the person, open parentheses, the name of the group chat, close parentheses, colon, and then the first three letters or so of the message because they truncate after three lines of text. Now, the issue is that if I go to the notification center in the Apple Watch, I see more characters after that thing. So the full message was sent as a notification, but because they chose to truncate after three lines, instead of just showing the entire message, the notification is useless because I just see the name of the person sending a message and the first three letters of what they sent every single time. So the problem is I just take out my phone and look on the lock screen because I see more characters there than if I just look on my wrist, which is stupid because that's the point of the Apple Watch. So Line is not the only app that is doing this, but it's the most irritating because it's the one I use every single day, several times a day. And every single notification that comes from a group chat, because the name of the group chat is long, it's useless as a notification. And I have to either launch the app, which hasn't been updated for watchOS 2, so it will spin and spin for longer than the time it takes until the screen turns off automatically, which is another issue.
It's an issue I see a lot with Transit. But these days I don't even use it because I don't know what's happening, but the UI is cached, but there's no update given to the UI.
Yeah, that's strange.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the notifications being useless and also apps that take longer than the sleep timeout to launch, those things erode confidence, and I am less likely to trust your app or to use your app to do anything at all on my watch because I have a terrible experience every single time I'm supposed to deal with your app, which sucks. And another thing which I thought was going to be fixed in watchOS 2, but it wasn't, is there are still a ton of things that Siri does on your phone that Siri on your watch doesn't do. And I've talked about this last week, so I'm not going to go over it too much. But again, this is an example from the original episode we did on the Apple Watch. If I say tweet blah 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 to Siri on my phone, it will tweet blah blah blah. But if I say tweet blah 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 to my watch, it says, oh, hand off on your phone. And then you hand off on your phone and you get a giant tweet button that you press and then it sends a tweet. But why couldn't I just press the tweet button on my watch where I said the message in the first place? Who knows? So little irritating things like that just make you go crazy about, like, Apple, you're supposed to care about details. Why can't you get any of this stuff right? And some of this is third-party stuff. I know it's not Apple's fault necessarily that every app runs slow as shit. People should be adopting watchOS 2 and all that stuff. But some of it is literally in their ballpark. The stuff with notifications interrupting dictation is unacceptable. The stuff with Siri not doing stuff that should be trivial to do on the watch is unacceptable. And it really is irritating long-term. So do you have anything to add to this section?
I think I have something more related to just apps, which might be a little bit early to talk about that, but I think the watch experience is better without third-party stuff, sadly. I'm so sad to say that. I'm, like, seriously sad and pissed to say that.
Yeah. I mean, all the first-party stuff is really great, and then third-party stuff basically is second-class citizen or third-class if we're talking about WatchKit on OS One, and they still haven't updated it. It's like...
And that
in my opinion, that original WatchKit never should have shipped.
Yep, I totally agree on that. And that brings back to this notion of erosion of user confidence. It's like, I have kind of even like shaky confidence regarding stuff in the watch, but at least I can trust it yet again. Like, it's sometimes just a little bit shaky, but like once in a while it will save my ass, and then like my confidence for it comes back.
Oh, I just thought of another example.
I just want to say, I cannot say that for third-party stuff.
Yeah. One of the cool features that was introduced in iOS 9 was Quick Reply, which means that apps can now support Quick Reply. If you get a notification on the OS, you can just swipe down on it, and you get a text field right there, and without quitting the app, you can reply directly to, let's say, Twitter, direct message, or whatever. I got a really important DM the other day, and I replied to it on my watch, and half an hour later, I got to my computer, and I realized that Quick Reply from the watch didn't actually send my DM. And it was like a time-sensitive thing. So I basically will never, ever use Quick Reply directly in a notification ever again because I can't trust it. So that's another thing that I just find weird and unreliable on the watch is like even stuff that works on iOS on the phone just randomly breaks on the watch. And because it's unreliable, I'm unlikely to actually use it. And in practice, that makes the watch less useful. And then you wonder, why did I spend $700 on this thing? Which we'll get to in a little bit.
Yeah, speaking of another thing that disappointed us about the watch, let's talk about glances.
Yeah. This is the part that I think is going to be most controversial in the entire show.
Oh, wow. Okay, so that was the part you were referring to earlier today.
Yeah.
Ooh.
As I may have said on the last time we talked about the Apple Watch, glances were my big feature. They were the thing I was looking the most forward to because it says it in the name. This is a device all about glanceable information. Glances should, in theory, be the fastest way to actually access that glanceable information on your wrist at all times. So there are certain issues that are just global to how this works. Glances always show up even if they have nothing to report. So let's say I have the deliveries glance enabled and I go to the glances. Deliveries will tell me 9 times out of 10 throughout the year that I have no deliveries coming in because I have no deliveries coming in. Why does it even show that to me? Why can't it just auto-hide itself? And this is not a problem with widgets on iOS. If you have the deliveries widget on iOS and you have no deliveries, it simply chooses not to present itself unless there are deliveries there. That's not something you can do on the Apple Watch, which is frustrating. And here comes the controversial part. I think Android Wear beats the crap out of iOS and watchOS on this front. So Android Wear is powered by Google Now. And Google Now, the entire point of Google Now is to display contextually relevant information at your fingertips at all times. Now, think about it. If you have the most contextually relevant information at all times on your wrist at all times, that's incredibly compelling. And it's way more compelling than having everything siloed off into apps, which, again, we've said apps, crappy experience for third-party apps. Don't use them. So it would have been great if the glances could have been at least useful. But in practice, a lot of them are very bad. And part of that has to do with you can't actually interact with the glances at all. The only interactive ones are the ones that are system provided, but you can't actually put buttons in glances at all. They're read-only for the moment for third-party apps.
Yeah, for third-party apps, it is just a giant button that launched the app.
Which is kind of useful because you can use it as a dock for your favorite apps, but honestly, that's pretty much the only point of glances right now on iOS, on watchOS, which is disappointing. So, as you may remember, my original belief of what glances were going to be is like Google Now cards, that apps were going to be able to say, hey, this is an activity that someone has been doing in my app, let's say a recipe. I want to see the next step of the recipe I'm working on. So I'm going to populate a glance with that recipe in the glances view. Or, hey, you got transit directions from your house to the mall. I'm going to keep the itinerary of what you have to do in your glances so I don't take over the entire OS with your directions like the OS does when you get transit directions, which is kind of crazy. And I guess what I really wanted ideally out of glances is a cross between Google Now, and now I'm going to go into the back catalog, the scrapbook app from the original Mac in 1984.
What?
Okay, so you don't remember this because you're new to the Mac, but basically in classic Mac OS, and this has been there since 1984 on the original Mac, there was a little desktop accessory called Scrapbook. And what Scrapbook was, is it was a desktop accessory, it wasn't even an app, where you could put things you cared about in there, and then you could copy and paste from them. So it was basically like a miniature multiple clipboards for the original Mac, and somehow it managed to live until OS 9 at the very end for the longest time, and it was a really ugly app, but it was really useful at the time. And my idea was, you're going to have apps contextually populate the glances with stuff that is relevant, and then you can also manually add glances for stuff that you care about. So let's say you had a snippet of text from a web page that you found on Safari on your phone, and you say, hey, it's important for me to remember that later when I'm out, so I'm going to select that, and then in the little share menu, well, I'm going to choose to save it as a glance, and then sort of like web clips back in the day on dashboard or whatever, you could have the text from that web page show up directly on your watch in glances or stuff like that. So you could immediately save things directly to your glances so you can refer to them quickly while you're on the go. That would have been my ideal scenario. In practice, that is not at all what glances are, and it's sort of a terrible shit show what they are right now. We basically just got iOS Notification Center widgets on your wrist, except not as good. And I think the reason Android Wear is sort of what's on top of mind right now is Google has all this stuff nailed, and Apple is incompetent at cloud services. So they are, and if you've used proactive features in iOS 9, you're probably rolling on the floor right now thinking of the idea of Apple making predictive contextual recommendations of stuff for glances, because I can tell you that the proactive features and Siri recommendations on iOS 9 are a complete joke.
I wouldn't say that. Maybe we can come back on that later, but I wouldn't say that. I have a couple of experience with it, and
I have only had terrible recommendations from Siri.
I wouldn't say that, because it's kind of, these days I kind of use it as a quick way to just jump to an app. But especially the proactive stuff, like every morning I just get a notification, maybe like 35 to 40 minutes before work, because I do have a generic event in my calendar to just keep track of time and where I should get to work and blah, blah, blah. And I did put the address, and every morning it will send me a notification saying you should leave for work now. I know it's based on traffic and I use transit, so I would even like it better with transit info, but at least it gives me, like, it's, when I see it, I find it nice. Just say like, oh, today, even if I don't care, but there's traffic today.
Well, I'm talking more in terms of like, the app recommendations and all that stuff compared to the stuff that is like, I'm looking at your calendar and saying, hey, you should leave about this much time before your appointment. That is a lot harder to screw up than, let's say, app recommendations, where if you have no discernible patterns, it is very hard to tell what is actually relevant and what isn't. Like the other day I tweeted, like, the Siri thing on the lock screen will not stop recommending that I open my calendar, except I don't, it's not handoff because I don't have the calendar open on any of my devices, and I never open the calendar app. I always use Fantastical, and it is forcing the calendar app in my face every day, and I have no idea why. And it's like, it's a complete black box of incompetence that I just don't know how to tell it, no, just shut up with the recommendations. You're not good at this. Don't even try. Let me do everything manually. I have more confidence that I will get stuff right than you. I have had just terrible experiences with Siri recommendations on iOS 9. And if I actually go to the Spotlight screen where the app recommendations are, it just recommends what's on my dock all the time because I'm always in those apps. And I already know that they're in my dock, so I don't need to go to that page to see the recommendations because it's always the same four apps. So I just can't trust that the notifications would get anything right. And if you look at stuff like For You and Apple Music, if you look at stuff like For You and Apple News, Apple News is particularly notorious. The people are saying like the recommendations are the worst thing they've ever seen. The best I would be able to say about Apple's contextual recommendation stuff is it's hit or miss at best. And I think we're demonstrating that if you've had good experiences with it and I've had terrible experiences, it's hit or miss.
Sure.
Whereas I would say that because Google is invasive and creepy, they know so much more about you than Apple knows that they are more, as much as we hate how they do it, they are more likely to give you good results than Apple is. And I have much more confidence that if I had an Android Wear watch, I would actually get what I would be looking for on my smartwatch much more often of the time at the top of that feed.
No, and you're totally right, because I, now that you mentioned it, I am reminded of my experience with Nexus 4 maybe 2 years ago.
And that sounds right.
And it was around that time that Google Now launched. And I remember sometimes I was just doing Google searches, and maybe a couple of minutes or hours, depending when I would look at Google Now, I would see a card related to a news related to the search I did in the past.
Yeah.
And that was kind of, sometimes it was just stupid search about like TV shows. I was like, okay, I don't want to know about those like Entertainment Weekly news about actor.
I was just looking up the name of this actor because I forgot his name, but I wasn't actually caring about the actual show and showing an interest in it.
Yeah, I just want to take a look at the Wikipedia page and that's it. Which, that's the only information I wanted. But now I get data. But at least they were able to say like, oh, you do have an appointment in your calendar. You do have a tracking number on your phone. Oh, it's about to arrive. That was pretty nice.
Like, as much as I like to shit on Google because of YouTube recommendations, which are maybe the best and the worst thing in the world at the same time.
Yeah, especially when they recommend you Video Games 8 videos.
Oh, God.
That's...
The level of creepiness of YouTube recommendations is unparalleled. I will tweet one word, and then it will say, oh, you tweeted that word, like, 5 minutes ago, I'm going to recommend you like a ton of videos related to that thing, even though you've never done anything related to that on your Google account ever. And I'm like, why are you doing this to me? Last year or 2 years ago or something, I mentioned, I was talking to a friend who lives in Indonesia about the election there. And literally for 3 weeks, every single video on my YouTube recommendations was in Indonesian, and I don't even speak Indonesian. I don't even know anything about their politics. I just mentioned the election once on Twitter, and I'm ruined for 3 weeks. So I can tell you, Google Now, I have more confidence in them because they are stalking you everywhere, even if it's not a Google property. And it's just really strange. And compared to that, you have like Apple, where they keep promoting this message of privacy, and we respect your privacy, and we keep everything siloed. But at the same time, that means that you have less knowledge to go with and less information. And since you're not in the cloud, you can't actually make observations based on correlations of multiple people's data. You can only do stuff based on my data alone and not track patterns of the global population. And it's incredibly creepy. And my issue with the way that Google and Facebook do it is they're advertising backed companies. So I think that their incentives aren't aligned with what I want them to be doing. But in the case of Apple, if only they were competent, I would have no trouble giving them more information that they are comfortable holding. It's just that they don't want to have anything to do with it. And that is sort of a problem, I think. So before I close out this glances section, there is one interesting thing that could happen, and that is is Google or Facebook going to make a watch app that is effectively Google Now, or Facebook is allegedly working on their own sort of Google Now thing for Facebook notifications.
They do also have their like concierge Facebook cam, which I saw the video of it and screenshot, and it looks crazy.
Yeah, well, you know how they cheat for that, right? Is as soon as something the assistant can't actually do completely by AI, it reaches out to a human being and they take over from there, which is troubling for another reason, because now that human being can see everything in your Facebook profile and your friends' Facebook profiles. But aside from that, it's an amazing technology.
Oh, I didn't know that part about human interaction, though.
Yeah, huh. It's sort of like a footnote, but it's there.
Okay, so they do have a bunch of people hidden somewhere in the world that just answer those requests.
Sometimes, yeah. If it's outside the range of what the assistant can do, it actually gets sent out to the humans. But the thing is, like, that's probably why it's a limited launch right now, only invite only in California, because they want to only have a limited number of people so that they don't overload their humans with so many weird requests that they can't be handled by the computer, you know?
Yeah, sure.
But it'll be incredibly interesting to see if Google Now and the new Facebook notifications thing, if those get watch apps in the future, because those have the potential of being more useful than anything provided by the actual operating system with regards to contextual information at your fingertips. The problem is it's always at least going to be one tap away. But otherwise, I think that might be interesting to see their takes on it. Google does have at least one watch app. I think maybe it's two now. They have the news and weather app, which is up, and I think there's another one, but I don't remember what. And Facebook has Instagram and Facebook Messenger on the Apple Watch. So
Google also has the Maps app. They do have a kind of... Yeah, they do have a Maps app.
I think they have... Oh, yeah. I forgot to download that one. I wanted to go check it out. I'll go download it after the
show.
Yeah,
I removed it, but I remember it being installed a couple of days ago.
I mean, it's probably terrible because of the API limitations, but...
No, it's kind of like, I think it's a button where you say what you want to search, or I think it's either your last search from the phone.
Oh, yeah. I remember reading about it now.
Yeah, something like that. I think you cannot search in the Watch app. You can just say, go there.
Yeah, that sounds right. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they solve the glance problem better than Apple's glances. So we should move on to the final thing, which is really the big question here, which is, would we recommend that someone normal buy an Apple Watch in its current state?
I think it is in two parts. If you think that you would rely on feature not available from the Apple's website, like from the Apple Watch webpage, if you think that developers could provide you with feature that you might want, don't count on it. So if you want something that is not part of Watch OS itself, that's probably not a good idea to buy the watch. If you're happy with fitness tracking and replying to iMessages and or maybe doing digital touch, something we didn't mention because you know what? We haven't used those features. Yeah, we haven't used those features. Unless we just want to trick each other at some random points. Except, like, if your need are only relying on notification and just say, oh, I have a notification on my phone, and all of the all of the OS feature, the Apple Watch can be recommended. If you're waiting for a need that can be filled by a third party, I don't think that's the product yet. The same way that a Pebble watch on iOS is not the product for that.
Do you think that $250 is too high of a starting price for a product that is as limited as the Apple Watch is?
Yes and no. Like, the price for the hardware quality is okay. Like, the price is fine for the quality of hardware you get. And that's what you expect from Apple.
All right. My take on the recommendation thing is... it's a non-essential device. Like, there is nothing that the watch does, aside from digital touch and the exercise stuff, that your phone cannot do. And arguably, your phone can do some of that stuff because it also has a motion coprocessor if you have a relatively recent iPhone. So it's non-essential, so it's very hard to convince. You have to find something to sell it with. And I don't think I can really find the number one selling feature of the Apple Watch other than silent notifications. The Taptic Engine is a huge deal. You can get notifications and no one else will know. And right now in 2015, if you are around Apple Watch owners and you have a ringtone or your phone vibrator is really loud, every single time it goes off, they hate you and think you are a very obnoxious person. And they have probably considered buying you an Apple Watch just to shut your goddamn phone up.
No, but even if they buy you a watch, you'll keep your watch sound to the maximum. It won't fix the problem.
See, I completely forgot that there was ever sound in the Apple Watch because it's always been on mute, and I will never take it off mute because the entire point of the Apple Watch is to have silent notifications that do not annoy other people.
No, I am reminded that the watch can emit sound when there's somebody in our office that has it unmuted all the time.
You know what you should do is you should put a trap door under their chair and just drop them.
That would be mean.
Yeah. So silent notifications is about the closest thing I have to a selling feature for that. And if I say to someone, you can get silent notifications for $250, they would probably laugh at me in my face. They would probably also think that I'm very stupid for buying the $700 version of the Apple Watch, which does effectively the same thing as the $250 version, except it looks nicer. I guess the fact that it's a fashion accessory also sort of screws with the expectations of pricing, because of course it is an Apple Watch. It is a status symbol. Right now it is a weird status symbol because as a failure of an iOS app developer, I am wearing this Apple Watch, which screams, hey, look at me. I'm a successful iOS developer, but that is another thing.
Regarding the style choices, one of the new ads that Apple launched recently, the one where the girl changes her clothes and then you see that the band color changes every time she changes clothes. Like on the floor, there's a big amount of clothes and you see that she's like trying to find the best fit. And every time she's like looking at the camera, thinking that she's looking at the mirror, you see that clothes has changed and her watch band has changed too. And you know what? Just that situation is a selling point for the Apple Watch.
Oh, definitely. Except I don't think we're necessarily in that demographic. I think it's cooler kids than us.
Okay, maybe. Maybe.
Maybe. But yeah, so I have a hard time recommending the product. I love my Apple Watch and I love what it does. I have a hard time recommending it. And it's very hard to flesh out why I have a hard time recommending it. But I feel like, again, I'm very satisfied with what it does right now, but I feel like it doesn't live up to the promise because of the third-party failures. And so much of what I do on my iPhones and everything is third-party. Like, the only first-party app I use, well, actually, now I use two. I use Safari, and I use the Activity app, and I use nothing else on my iPhone that is first-party, really.
I do use iMessage a lot.
Lol. Anyway, as we were saying,
I knew that you were doing that. I'm sure. I was like, I'll mention iMessage and you'll laugh.
Yeah. It's just, yeah, it's challenging to recommend it because at the same time, this is a device, as we said at the top of the show, all of this is software that can be fixed and it might be fixed next year. It might be fixed in 2 years. The problem is like, if it doesn't go fixed for so long, this product is so limited for its potential that it's worrisome as a trend. Of course, it's only been 6 months, right? So maybe I'm over dramatic a little bit. But
we love to be a little bit over dramatic.
I mean, that's sort of the entire point of the show.
Yeah, because that podcast would be way more boring if we didn't put some touch of dramatic in it.
Well, at least I'm not overreacting like that guy with the cloud in Smash video that I linked you, but so that's about what I think about the Apple Watch. It's sort of an ambiguous, well, I can't really recommend it, but it's cool. And if you have a lot of extra money on your hands, maybe you should get one.
If you want a cool gadget, that's a cool gadget to spend money on. That's it.
Early adopters, sure, go ahead. If you're a normal person, unless you do very basic communication things on your phone and do fitness, and you are fine with a device that does those things very, very well and not much else very, very well, then go ahead and buy a sport model, I guess. But yeah.
Yeah, so limitless possibility recommendation for the Apple Watch is that's a cool gadget, and that's it.
Limitless possibility recommendation for the Apple Watch is, yeah, it's cool, but eh.
And that's it for this week. Wow.
Apple is going to hate us. They're going to blacklist our podcast.
You know what? We should just end the show here, and you should move the it's cool part at the end of the track. Okay, so you can find this show and the show notes at limitlesspossibility.net/28, because it's the 28th episode. You can also find the podcast as a whole on limitlesspossibility.net. You can also find the podcast on Twitter at Limipo Podcast. That's LIMIPO_podcast. You can find myself on Twitter at Lukonosh, LUCCONOUCHE.
And I'm at Sakurina, SAKURINA.
And we'll see you in 2 weeks.
See you in 2 weeks.